Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. So welcome to episode 100. We've hit the century mark. It's honestly pretty crazy to think about how much content we've all collectively come up with. And a huge thank you to everyone who has helped me turn this into a bit of a brand. I really enjoy doing this. I also really enjoy having an open mic to say whatever I want to say on any given week. A little bit of history, though. I was going back just to remind myself, episode one of the podcast dropped on February 19th of 2018. And I might as well go back to the origin story because here we are 100 episodes in. Some of you might be new. You might have picked up along the way. You might have just been selectively listening. So I thought I'd talk to you a little bit because I think it's funny where this podcast came from. So I'll go ahead and paint the scene for you. I was working at Ubiquity, and that's the company that I sold Strategent to in August of 2013. And I remained on at Ubiquity to oversee the Americas for a little over 6 years. But towards the end of 2017, I had basically decided that I was done with Ubiquity and the nonsense of leadership there. You can only watch so many dumb decisions before you just have had enough. And so I took some time off around my birthday in January of 2018. I relaunched BillBruno.com, which had been a domain that I've owned for forever, but it was a website 15 years ago that looked nothing like it does now. And I also then decided to learn how to produce and publish a podcast, buy some equipment, because I decided it would be fun to try to do that, just thinking it would become a bit of a hobby, not even realizing that I would do it for basically 100 straight weeks. But upon launching the podcast, Ubiquity tried to shut it down. The CEO and chief strategy officer went so far in their little diabolical cave to create a rule for anyone in leadership that basically said that they could not create any content that was not owned and controlled and branded as Ubiquity, that I was in direct violation of it, and that basically I had to cease and desist. So my reaction, as you might expect, given that I knew I was going to be resigning anyways, was that I laughed at them. And I also told them that I was very flattered that they decided to create a rule just for me across an entire global business, and that I thought it was a great use of time for them to be doing that strategically instead of trying to stop a tanking stock price. And I also told them that they could tune in weekly to learn something. And based on my metrics and what I see from the analytics that I do capture, they still do. So then I resigned just in time for golf season and my 6 month notice period, and my golf game heavily improved and the podcast, you know, really started to pick up some steam. And so here we are, 99 episodes later on the 100th episode, and let's get into some topics for today's undercard. Up first, we'll talk a little bit about Accenture. So if you've been an avid neater, you've heard me talk about Accenture, you've heard me talk about the fact that they have a bit of a conflict as a business. They've been doing media auditing for years, where you know you basically audit the performance of media campaigns, but they've also been an agency. They've been on the creative side, they've been on the media side, and so it's a conflict of interest because you shouldn't be able to grade your own homework. And they're obviously incentivized, or could be incentivized, to provide negative results about someone else's work in an effort to try to upsell them on their own. And so, now it's official. They've decided to formally close the media auditing business. That auditing arm actually had been left to die on the vine for a few years now. Even back when I was at Ubiquity, I had spoken to some folks at Accenture who told me that they were basically just letting that dwindle off while they worked on some of their other strategic priorities. But they've now gotten it to the point where it can be shut down. So there's been a lot of news around that, a lot of people jumping in on that. I think for me, the media auditing business in general is kind of dying on the vine because no one has been able to adapt to the digital first world. You know, traditional TV is still important, but honestly, cost benchmarking traditional TV at this point is not all that great. You've got out-of-home advertising, which is kind of the Wild Wild West. You've got barter, which is like a dark alley in New York at like 3 in the morning. And then you've got digital, which no one can really seem to sort out because there's so many different formats, so many different places you could buy, and a lot of lack of transparency around it. So in general, I think media auditing needs to evolve or it's going to go away. And I think you see that in the industry with not a whole lot of growth in the organizations that solely focus on it. Next up, we've got Google, and they're in the news for some pretty interesting things. So first and foremost, they're in a bit of a battle now with Ireland over location data. If you're paying attention at home, they have an antitrust thing here in the US that's a bit pesky. They've got some things going on all over the place around the world. And as they say, you don't want to fight a war on that many fronts, right? But in essence, Ireland's top privacy regulator launched a probe into how Google is processing location data, what type of data it's capturing from their users, how they're using it, is it aligned with GDPR, you know, are they being good stewards of data as a processor of that data, so on and so forth. Apparently, there's been a variety of complaints as well from various consumer organizations across the EU. And this inquiry is going to establish whether or not it's even legal for what Google's doing with location data. And so this will be interesting. This is yet another situation where Google's going to have to invest in legal fees. I'd love to see what that number's up to ever since the launch of GDPR. But a Google rep actually did provide a quote. They don't often jump into the mix with commentary when these things drop. But the Google rep said, and I quote, "We will cooperate fully with the Office of the Data Protection Commission in its inquiry and continue to work closely with regulators and consumer associations across Europe. In the last year, we have made a number of product changes to improve the level of user transparency and control over location data," end quote. And while I honestly do believe that a lot of this is because many people don't read the fine print when they click I agree just to move on through a login or to use an app, it'll still be interesting to see how some of this shakes out from a Google perspective, because obviously they've got a bit of a target on their back. But what I did find most amusing about that quote from the Google rep is that it was mentioned that they've made a lot of product changes to improve transparency. And they have, not just with location data, but they also did it with Google Photos. Unfortunately for Google, this didn't work well either, because some of you might have your naughty videos compromised if you've been storing those on Google Photos. And again, I need to state, just stop using Android phones. I've ranted about this before, and what more details do you need? Now you can't even record your own sex life without worry from Google and hackers. It's a rough life that we're living here in these first world problems. So the time is November 21st through November 25th of 2019. And lots of people use Google Photos to back up videos and photos stored on their phones. You can do the same thing with Apple. So I'm sure this will happen there at some point as well. But Google, in response to the transparency piece, offers an option for people to download a copy of their private data, and it's called Google Takeout. But when people use Google Takeout to download their own content, they were actually accidentally given, in some cases, videos uploaded by people that they don't know. And that was just for the period of November 21st through November 25th of last year. So that's just not a good look, obviously. I mean, if you can't even protect your consumer data just from a privacy perspective, and you're just doling that out to other people on accident with an application that was originally written to better comply with GDPR, then you're in for a world of hurt. But switching gears to our last topic of the undercard, it's again focused on privacy. For those of you in the US, you know that we had a caucus in Iowa and they tried a new app for some of the voting. It didn't go well. It was embarrassing, but it wasn't nearly as bad as what happened in Israel. So the Likud party, the political party in Israel, also created an app for their upcoming election. And unfortunately, they end up leaking the information of over 6 million registered voters. That's the full voter register list. And there's a lot of PII in that as well, which is no bueno. The company that created the app, and this quote cracked me up, said that it was, and I quote, "a one-off incident and immediately dealt with," end quote. But, I mean, come on, the damage was done. Your app had really two goals. One was to help this political party manage all of the voters heading into election day, and the other was to protect user data. So I guess one out of two ain't bad. But that wraps up the undercard, and let's go ahead and jump into today's main event. So, truth be told, I have some fantastic neaters that work at Salesforce, so I'm sure that they'll love being on episode 100 as the main topic. In fact, I'm sure that they had management at Salesforce delay this announcement just to make it onto episode 100. But Salesforce acquired Evergage. Now, Salesforce, if you remember, launched their CDP vision. It's been talked about at Dreamforce, and they've been working on trying to make it a reality. It's slow going, but the Salesforce Marketing Cloud has a lot to offer while they work on it. They just don't do activation all that well, and they don't do data capture. Evergage is actually a vendor that I worked with in my previous life, and they've built a solid personalization platform. Now, they've won some awards for being a CDP, but honestly, who hasn't? I think that they'd even tell you that they lead with personalization and data activation as the main focus of their platform. It's the part that works the best, and it's the part that sells the best. Adobe Target, as an example, is their main competitor for that, and they've been very aggressively attacking Adobe in messaging and also even out at the Adobe Summit. Now, Evergage has proven that there is money for the taking when you offer an alternative to Adobe. And Salesforce obviously has a battle ongoing with Adobe from a marketing cloud standpoint as well, hence them both launching or announcing CDPs, even though they're both struggling to launch it. Now, Evergage isn't great with data management overall, and Salesforce hasn't been great at activation. Both struggle and don't really offer a data capture solution that's fit for purpose either, and that's the main gap left now when you look at the product suite the two of them offer as a team. But I'd suspect that Evergage's personalization is the focus here, and using that to activate the data in CRM and otherwise across the Salesforce Marketing Cloud. So it makes a lot of sense from a partnership perspective. There's really no reason to reinvent the wheel. You've got, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So now they can both combine and align against Adobe. And honestly, I think their solution could even get more powerful with data capture partners. And this is something worth discussing in a future episode, but really what you're seeing here is the right way to think of a customer data platform or to think of activation. If you think about it in sort of three facets or three pillars, you have data capture and contextualization, you know, that the timeliness of that data as well with a published data model, you've got data management, and then you've got data activation. And all three of those need to play well together if you truly want to harness customer data and build more positive customer experiences. So I'll dig into that more in the coming weeks, but you know, Salesforce has a lot of open API documentation. They also have MuleSoft on board, so I'm sure a lot of that will factor into the development needed to try and formally bring these platforms together from a Salesforce Marketing Cloud perspective and Evergage. And I think that's honestly the main struggle. We're used to seeing that when two vendors try to come together. For example, many of you might remember Offermatica. It was a truly progressive technology at the time for A/B and multivariate testing. And then it went to Omniture, and now it's part of what makes up Adobe Target. Although I'd argue that not only has it gotten more difficult to use, it's also not nearly as progressive as it once was. So that's where we'll be watching for the next year to see what Salesforce does and to see how Adobe might retort. And let's see what Salesforce does with Evergage and how quickly they move, because they're a very large ship. There's a lot of development needed, but Salesforce usually, when they bring someone on board, already has started some of the development via their partnerships previously anyways. I think this one's a little bit slower behind than others, but overall it's a very smart move by Salesforce, and it's again yet another acquisition of a pure play sort of personalization CDP, just like the AgileOne Acquia deal that happened in 2019. But with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this week's episode. Thank you again so much for listening. Please share this with your friends. Please post about it using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat on any platform of your choosing. And we'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. Until then, I hope you have a great rest of your week.